is David Reske, CEO of NowSpeed Marketing, and welcome to this edition of In the Now, where we focus on uncovering the myths and misunderstandings of marketing and leadership with some of the world's most interesting people. And my guest today is Paul Tarisi with Indigo One, a creative agency in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Paul's agency builds brands and does amazing design work to help companies grow. And you, Paul, you've done so many projects for clients over the years. What's your favorite type of assignment? What do you get jazzed about getting asked to do?
Oh, that's a hard one. It kind of comes full circle in terms of it's part of the reason why 20 years ago, I founded Indigo One, which was, well, coming out of the creative background, we love the creative aspect of marketing, this creative development, connecting with the audience, understanding the audience, working that through, and from a data standpoint, seeing the results of our work in market, in, you know, a real market, not a focus group. But one of the biggest enjoyment factors, I suppose, is working directly with clients. I mean, part of the reason why Indigo One was created was because, yes, there were other outside factors, like the company I worked for, part of Omnicom, shut the office. So that was a driving factor. But also, I want client contact, direct client contact. I didn't want our comments, questions, feedback to be filtered through account service. And there have been instances throughout my career where we'd run into issues going through account service to the client. And I just wanted to avoid all that. Mm-hmm. But by having a closer relationship with the client, we understand better what it is they're trying to achieve and what else they're doing to support that goal. Yeah. It's not operating in isolation.
Yeah, that's a powerful idea, Paul. So it's not just the type of assignment, but it's really the passion for being with clients and helping clients be successful. That's a really cool part of your story.
Well, I think it's worked because so far our client agency relationship is at least twice as long as the national average.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, that makes such a huge difference as an agency. Well, Paul, as you know, I like to start these conversations with what I call a Mythbuster question. And the question that you and I have been talking about is kind of marketing effectiveness. And the myth I wanted to ask you about with marketing can be more effective just by raising your ad budgets. Is that
yes.
True or not true?
Absolutely.
Okay. It can be more effective. All right. So that's not
raise the budget.
Yeah, raise
no, the budget. Yeah. That's an interesting myth. Generally speaking, I'd say that belief is wrong. Or at least largely unnecessary. Hmm. Though there are a few exceptions. It depends on what you've done in the past and where you want to go. So obviously, if you're starting out and you've got small budgets, to get to the next stage, yeah, you're probably going to have to increase your budget to some extent, but you don't have to try to match your competitors. It also could be circumstance driven. There was a CEO of a client that we used to work with. Ultimately, they were acquired. But before that, he said, I'm probably paraphrasing here, I could hire 100 salespeople today, but I'd rather blow the marketing budget. Now, great news to hear to any marketer, certainly on an agency side, but in his case, it was circumstance-driven, and there were B2B clients, but whenever the salespeople would go to a prospect meeting, they spent most of their time re-educating everyone else in the room on what it was they did, who they were there, why they were there, who brought them in, and why they should have a follow-up conversation. Which is a waste of time, effort, money, travel expenses, the whole thing. So I understand the rationale behind his statement. So yeah, there are circumstances where that makes sense. But generally speaking, I'd say No, I don't think it is.
It
I
feels like,
get it.
yeah, it
I
feels like,
really
well,
do.
there's this relationship between kind of investments in creative or strategy or content that are necessary before you start to raise your budget. And if you don't have those things in place and know that they work, then raising your budget won't necessarily, or raising, let's say, your advertising spend won't necessarily get you, get the results that you're looking for. So you've done a lot of creative work. Where should clients start with creative investments? So where should they really be focused? And maybe there's different types of companies. Let's say the startup example. Where should they really start with the creative investment in order to get the most effective results they can get?
I think there's two aspects to that. One is the getting clear on what their goal is. It's easy to say, okay, other competitors in our space are, they're all over social media and we should be doing social media. I get the reaction to that. I understand where it's coming from. But before you start investing and spending money and budget on everything related to social media, and social media is not free. Posts have to be created. Someone has to do that. Other content has to be developed that those posts are referring to for downloads or whatever else. So there's a lot more to it than just saying, I want to be on social media. But the bigger question is, if that's what you want to do and it makes sense and you've got data to support the choice, which platforms, how committed to it are you? And where is your audience? It's all very well saying, I want to be on TikTok or X, or Facebook. Well, if you're in a B2B space, that may be totally irrelevant. You could be wasting your time and along with that budget. So understanding where your audience is and what it is you're trying to achieve are the two big things before you're doing anything else. The other thing is just because your competitors are doing it, you don't know if it's actually working for them. We had a client who they had done very little social. They had a presence, but they weren't really active on it. But their biggest competitor was. But when we looked at their competitors' posts, they were all job related, hiring related, and those posts were being circulated, which made the numbers look better. But that wasn't doing anything for their customer base. So yeah, they're there, but it's not helping them. I mean, helping them from a staffing side, but it's not helping them from a marketing side. So understanding the market, where that market is, and then from that, developing creative that answers those needs.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense and follows a really logical process. In your experience, where do clients either, get the best bang for their buck in campaigns and creative, and where do they waste more money than they should? What do those two extremes look like, in your experience?
Let's flip that around and say let's start with where they waste it. I see a ton of clients. Well, not clients. I mean, they're not our clients. I see a ton of brands who are running digital ads everywhere. I just keep seeing the same ads in different places. and it's kind of a shotgun effect in terms of we want to be on all the platforms that carry digital advertising. So we do programmatic advertising, but they are everywhere. So they don't necessarily know, at least initially, it's kind of a test. I hope they're looking at it as a test to see where the leads are coming from and which platforms make sense for them. But they're spending a lot of money to get those ads bid, placed, shown for what result? And then with that, even if I click on an ad and look, go to the web page, days later, I'm still receiving the same ad. The creative hasn't changed. It hasn't moved me further along. They don't know whether or not I've already purchased or purchased a competitor product. There's just no movement. So each time they're paying and paying and paying on a, you know, per view basis. When you're talking about hundreds of thousands of views per day, that gets expensive. There's, so I would say, yeah, just because you're doing digital doesn't mean that you're reaching your audience. The flip side of that is where they can save money. There are resources out there where you can identify a market. And we were actually doing, last few weeks, we've been doing some research on that, to identify specific markets that we know we can target. It's an addressable market where we can target those people because they have previously and recently shown an interest in the topic. Now, whether that's geo-fenced or nationwide or whatever, they've shown an interest and we can target them. Which, if you're in a, say you're a multi-state business, you can just target those states. You don't have to do a national ad campaign to do that. So you're saving a lot of money and a lot of your budget by doing that. The other areas are things like, you know, assuming you have everything else buttoned down. Years ago, there were brands who chose their agencies, whether it be, you know, we have Saatchi or Leo Burnett or whatever it was. And a larger part of that was because of bragging rights. It wasn't necessarily because the people were any better at what they did. it was just the, we've got this big agency working for us. I think the same, to some extent, holds true today in terms of we have this agency working for us. So they're spending a lot more because of that name recognition. It's the same, you know, why you buy a brand, why buy Nike instead of someone else. But those people move around. I mean, I used to work in those agencies. I don't know. So the experience I had that I can apply to any client today is based on working for those big Fortune 100 global brands. But at the same time, it's equally applicable to a smaller company that has 20 employees. The biggest thing that I found as a an indicator of success is that the client believes in the value of marketing. Because if they don't, it becomes ad hoc, random. They'll do this, they'll do that. It didn't work. They didn't give it time. They weren't committed to it. And it falls apart. And then they blame the agency that did it. So they get rid of the agency, start again with someone else who has a slightly different view. And that cycle perpetuates.
And they never really get to the value that they're looking for. I think that's a really interesting idea. And I'd like to explore that a little bit deeper, that you work with clients that believes in the value of marketing. And they, you know, in the agency side, we might say the client gets it. But I think what we're really saying is, like what you said, where they believe it, they understand it. I found that, you know, the difficult clients are ones that don't understand it and are just expecting the agency to create a miracle when they don't really have their product market fit figured out. They don't have the differentiators figured out. They don't have the, don't really have a, maybe a business product model that works even figured out. The sales, you know, they're like, yeah, we're generating leads, but the salespeople aren't following up. Like, if a lot of things are broken, it's hard for the agency to fix it. So yeah.
Yeah. The agency can't, I mean, you only have so much ability. As an agency, you're not internal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you might get heard a little better because you're not internal versus someone who raises the same issue, who works on staff. But yeah, I mean, you know, we can drive the best qualified leads on the planet, but if you don't follow through from a sales standpoint, assuming what your sales cycle is like, it's not going to work.
So, Paul, describe what you see as kind of the best agency-client relationship. What are the elements that go into that relationship that really make it successful?
Trust. I'd say trust is probably the biggest one, in that we had a client that we worked with for about 9 years, and we lost them through an acquisition. But during that time, we went from, and it was all project-based. It was never a retainer. We were never classified as official agency of record, but we worked with them for 9 years. And each project led to another one, which led to another one, which led to others in other verticals. And it got to the point where we were their go-to. I mean, they dabbled with some other agencies on ad hoc projects, but we were their go-to for whatever the vertical was. And when things started before COVID, you know, years ago, people would start working from home because, you know, Zoom came along, the internet, and all that kind of stuff. We didn't have to have face-to-face meetings. It was very much a phone call, a couple of emails, here's a PDF of the creative brief. Go at it. It's like, we understood their market. They knew we understood their market. They trusted us to do great work. We took it and just ran with it. There was no hand holding on their part. There was no, this is what another agency is doing. Can you incorporate that into the creative? There was, we were just concept the campaign, show them three or four alternatives at a presentation. They would select one. We would further develop it, turn it into production, go through that whole process, and launch it. There was just so much trust there. We were really part of the team. We just weren't on site.
Yeah, those kind of relationships can be awesome. And you know, it's funny. I talk about some of our client relationships where we have more institutional knowledge than, and we've been there longer than any of their employees, right?
Yeah.
And so one of the things I think about in some CMOs, I like to think of, or I like to call empire builders, right? They're trying to hire all the internal people and build their own empire. But, you know, the agency, it feels like, can be part of the empire, right? So is there any reason that agencies can't just be a long-term extended part of that team? Or do you think it's natural for agencies to kind of come and go, you know, as the company's needs change?
There should be no reason why they can't be part of the long-term team. Mm-hmm. We have, in several cases, we have been that knowledge bank, as to why things were done a certain way, why other things were not done. We've worked really well with in-house teams as an extension of that team. And we've been the external, well, we've been the team. We just, you know, they don't have an internal team, so they've relied on us for everything. So it can and should go both ways. I guess when you're asked to step in when they've lost someone high up, to make sure that projects still move forward, there's, you know, that's a vote of trust. And that's happened a few times for us. I've forgotten the first part of what you said.
Yeah, no, that's all right. Let me ask something else. So, you know, as agencies, we want that trust and that long-term relationship, but clients need something too. What can agencies do to be more trustworthy and be worthy of that long-term relationship?
Well, I think a large part of it is support. I mean, you're supporting the CMO, VP of marketing, they're getting their work done, or you know what they need done. They have their role, but their role should not be copywriting, art directing, overseeing production, going to press checks, whatever it is, right? I mean, that's not what they're paid for.
Mm-hmm.
Yet I see quite a few, when they have time, that's what they're doing.
Right. It's almost like they're going back to that. I once had a client who was a law firm, and we were building a website for them, and he really wanted to be the creative director on the website. He really wanted to choose the fonts and the colors and place this here. And just like every meeting, it was just really art directing, not even creative director. He was really like, you know, he was like, he wanted to be the graphic designer of every page and every graphic. And that relationship devolved because we were just sitting back taking instructions, and the project went on for a year of website iterations, endless revisions. So that's hard. So you need that. I think what you're talking about in trust is you want that trust in a relationship, but you also want trust to do the work, right? You want to be able to be trusted so that they can get it all done. So,
yeah, I mean, they've got, you know, they've been pulled in multiple directions, usually in meetings, because everyone's meeting heavy these days. But you want someone you can count on to just do it. And you want someone to count who can do it drama free. Mm-hmm. Like, ideally, for any brand, any marketer, you don't want to be spending your time babysitting several other vendors who all have a piece of the pie or a stake in this campaign, because they're going to end up fighting amongst themselves. No creative person I know relishes executing someone else's creative idea. So they're going to be pushing for their agenda, whether it's their creative or more of the budget or whatever it is. But so you've got that piece going on over here. Like managing a herd of cats, it's unnecessary. And it takes up so much of their time that they're not focused on strategy, what's coming down next quarter, this time next year. They should be forward looking. And to give them the time and space so that they can be, they need a team that they can count on, whether it's internal, external, doesn't matter, but they need to be able to count on a team.
Yeah, that makes total sense. You know, in my experience, especially, it's probably more in tech than in other industries, but I've seen it across different industries. Sometimes I see what I call the new CMO playbook, where the new CMO comes in. The first thing they do is fire the agency, bring in the old agency that they work with in their last role. What do you think of the pros and cons of that strategy? Should it ever happen? Because you're the agency being brought in, and sometimes you're the agency being fired. So probably get it on both sides. So what are the challenges of that approach that we see all the time as an agency?
Well, we've worked with a large global SaaS client that did a lot of smaller acquisitions, smaller or equal size acquisitions. And we were the incumbent, so which is great, because then we get to help take all those assets of that acquired company and turn it into the new brand, and it extends the product line for the company. So from that side, it's great. But we also understand our client and their market. And if they bought, let's say they're SaaS, and they bought an HR component that incorporated into their suite, well, we understand what HR is. We understand the HR target market and that it's cross-vertical. We also understand the brand, and we know what their goals are and all that other stuff that doesn't need to be retold. So we just instinctively incorporate it. On the flip side, some of our clients have been acquired, and then we've been jettisoned with the new, either the new owner or the new CMO. And That I've never really understood, because we've helped build the brand. I mean, they were bought for a reason, presumably because of the acquiring company liked the product, service, and or customer base. But they don't necessarily want to buy a company that they have to start all over again with a whole new customer base and lose all the market share. Well, having built that market share and relationship and brand awareness, why would you get rid of the very team that's responsible for it and give it to someone who may have a relatable history in the space, but it's not the same? So I've never really understood. I can see a transition period, but not a you're done, we'll start over, and we lose everything, all our knowledge, equity, the whole thing.
So if you're a CMO, let's say for a SaaS company, you're coming into that role, well, you know, what advice can you give to that person who comes in and says, well, they're being hired maybe because the old CMO, you know, is not meeting company objectives, or the CEO or the board wants to change. So they're kind of coming in as a change agent. What advice can you give to them about how they should work with the agency to get the best out of them? Because they may want to make a change. They may want to come in and change the brand or the strategy or the look and feel or something like that. But how could they work with the existing agency to make that relationship work and get the most out of it?
I think the first thing is to pause and understand what the current agency has done. Have a meeting with them. We will let go, or the client decided to move their marketing to the West Coast, having bought this company. No one ever reached out to us and said, what did you do? What worked? What didn't work? It was just when this project ends, everything's moving over to California. Good luck. Don't call me after this. I mean, it's like, I just don't understand why someone would just cut it off. I understand why someone would want to work with someone they've worked with previously, especially if it's in the same space. As it's a very relational industry. We've been invited to help other clients because a client contact we worked with at one place went to somewhere else, which has been great. But there's a similarity. I mean, they know us, we know them. It's in a similar industry. If we had someone who went from, let's say, SaaS to, I'm trying to think of something I'm totally unfamiliar with, food and beverage. Let's say they went to work for General Mills or Kellogg or someone like that, right? I have no idea. I mean, I would be the first to raise my hand and say, look, we did great work for you at the SaaS company. We helped build that brand. I eat cereal, but I've never really marketed it. It's the same kind of thing as earlier in my career. I ran into a few agencies and they said things like, we're hiring a creative team for a beer account, but the client wants someone who's, or the team, to have beer account experience. Well, it's like, who doesn't have beer experience in some degree, right? How hard can that be to learn? The learning curve is so little, so light for something like that, compared to something that's much more technical, like SaaS or medical device or pharma, where it was highly regulated, or financials, which we've worked in both. But that just being cut off and no follow up. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it makes their life easier. They just don't have to deal with it. Maybe they made a commitment to the other agency. Hey, I'm moving over to here. I'll bring you in. I get all that, and I understand the relationship. But as someone who's just joined a new company, I would say just pause, understand what it is that company does in their market, who their target market is, and have conversations with the incumbent teams, whether it's in-house staff or external.
Yeah. And then understand their capabilities, who the team is,
yeah,
you know, what the agency's done, what the relationship like, what the history's like. Yeah. And then
what they can bring to the table. I mean, you know, agencies are so used to changing direction with different clients, new strategy. Having a change of staff personnel doesn't change what the agency can do. If you don't want to do brand advertising in industry publications anymore and you want to shift to all digital, fine. We can do that.
Right.
I mean, that's not...
Or we want to stop advertising. We want to focus totally on content and do SEO or whatever. Yeah. Well, it's been a fascinating conversation, Paul. I think there's a lot of things that that agencies can do to build that relationship. And I think this conversation about having a trust relationship with the CMO so that they can get the most out of it and so we can be successful is really powerful.
I'd actually go one further and say it's not just with the CMO. We've had our trust is beyond just the marketing department. It's with the head of sales, CRO. It's with the CEO, CMO, COO. It's the entire C-level suite. Because when the CMO goes, the CEO, who's still there, who wants to continue growing the company, you know, you can still help, especially if it's the agency is bridging the gap while they're going through another search. So, yeah, the relationship has to be broader than just one-on-one.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Paul, it's been a great conversation. If people want to get in touch with you and learn about your agency and some of your other services, how would they do that?
Indigo-1.com or find me on LinkedIn.
Perfect. And we'll put a link to it in this podcast episode landing page itself. So good. Well, thanks for taking the time, Paul. I really appreciate the conversation.
David, pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.